Good morning. Today is a Tuesday, 19th of March. Joining us this morning for real and here, Yana Velikovic. What happened?
Good morning. What do you mean for real and here?
Jeff was here last time, and before that you were out gallivanting somewhere, and when we're back into the holidays, and you know, it's been a while.
Oh, you're lonely.
I don't even get a high five on that one, huh? Fine, thanks.
I'm here.
Okay, good.
Good morning, everyone. Now the torture begins.
Torture?
Yeah, no, this is not my favorite part.
Really?
No, we talk about this. It's not my favorite part, because then I realize how little I know in life, and then...
It should be a spur to expand your horizons.
Well, that's why I'm here.
Because I expand horizons?
Apparently.
Yeah.
Through your little red book.
Well, I have expanding horizons. Take your pick. All right, here we go. Why are those for and against war called hawks and doves? That's almost nature.
Right, so maybe it should be in my wheelhouse?
At least on the property.
Well, I mean, dove is a symbol of peace.
Mm-hmm.
And a hawk is a hunter.
Okay.
Nah, I got nothing here. I'm not a war expert here.
Those who side with war have been called hawks since 1798, when Thomas Jefferson coined the term war hawk. The description of those who favor peace as doves is from the biblical book of Genesis.
Okay.
When Noah set a dove out over the water to see if it was receding, it returned with an olive leaf, indicating there was land nearby. The modern use began during the Cuban Missile Crisis. Again, probably predates you.
I am aware of the Cuban Missile
Crisis. Well, knowledge is, you know, and continues to be used in the present.
Right. So now we've started.
I thought I would play the age card before you tried to take advantage of it. I still think Reagan's quote was perfect.
Which Reagan quote?
Oh, about age? Yeah, sure. I don't want to take advantage of the lack of experience of my competitor. I mean, he did it better than that, but yeah.
Fair enough.
Keep waiting for Trump or Biden to try to use that.
So you come from
1780? I see. You're really not concerned about walking out of here, are you?
No, apparently not.
Oh. Well, I understand that you had a little bit of a public presentation. I wouldn't say performance, but let's call it a presentation, a week or so ago, that had people there.
Right, in person.
Yeah, in an auditorium, meeting room kind of thing, not a series of computer screens.
Right.
What happened?
Well, let's see.
Did you offer free food?
Well, it wasn't my event. I was just invited to speak. last week was the meeting of Redwood Coast Energy Authority's Community Advisory Committee. And the advisory committee was interested in the topic of the power procurement portfolio that's associated with the Community Choice Energy Program that we have here in Humboldt County, which is, should we start with what that is?
Probably.
Okay, so... I'm maybe not the best representative of this, but the gist is that
rounded corners.
The gist is that a while ago there was legislation passed that enabled communities to develop their own power portfolio. In other words, communities could decide where their energy could come from, and it's something that's available nationwide. And Humboldt County, especially through the leadership of Redwood Coast Energy Authority, had been exploring kind of energy issues for a long time and thinking about our energy future and energy stability and our values. Sorry about that.
And using PG&E as the infrastructure to deliver the goods.
Right. So you don't change how the lines are delivered. You don't change who actually, you know, maintains the power to your house or you call when you need help. But a community could decide to put their values together and put their dollars together to put a choice out there in terms of where do they want to procure power. So power could be procured based on the idea that it's the cheapest, based on the idea that it's local, based on a set of values that match the community. And I think I'm going to estimate maybe 13 of these. Sorry for those who are listening who know better than me, but in California, there are a number of communities that have banded together to do this. And the goal is generally to be about at the price of PG&E, in general, because it's hard to pay more for power than what you currently pay through that.
And then the benefit is based on the priority set that is established.
By the community. And so that has been going on for a number of years here. People can opt out. It's not mandatory. And then within Redwood Coast Energy Authority's portfolio, there's a number of different grades that you can opt into depending on where your values are. And in this case, the question is, let me back up. In Redwood Coast Energy Authority's efforts, they decided to work on making sure we had some local energy within our portfolio. It's a great way for economic development, a great way to support your values and your community. A strong focus on renewables, and that has a whole variety of different options. They're in the process right now of developing a solar energy somewhere else. But essentially all the electrons flow into the grid, and you're basically choosing a little part of that. Most of us are essentially getting the power directly from the PG&E power plant here, the natural gas powered plant, but we're purchasing a slice of that pie of energy options. And over time, we can begin to nuance that and refine that based on what our interests are, what our values are. And every community's interests and values could be different, and that's perfectly appropriate.
So that's part of the reason for this concept to exist.
Right. I mean, I think I'm all for it. I think it's a really interesting way to put your values and your dollars together and be able to have some control over.
So it's like a portfolio that one might have with a financial advisor.
Sure.
You want this kind of company, not that kind of company, or that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
So is it, your presentation wasn't around this, but your sense, is it working?
I think it's working, yeah. I mean, I think they, again, I don't represent Redwood Coast Energy Authority, so I'm going to give you the broad brush. I think basically people had to opt out. You were all rolled in. I think the opt-out is relatively small overall, and we've been able to support a number of things that match the values of the community. And so the advisory committee was looking for some exploration into some of our local sources and some discussion around the environmental values associated with our
local. So some additional options, possibly.
No, just to
or expansion on what?
Just to better understand what we're purchasing.
With that as a prelude, we'll be back.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets. More than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Yana Valakovic from the Cooperative Extension at Spruce Point.
That's right. We're so cooperative there.
I know. Kumbaya. You need some sprouts? Swing on by.
Sprouts?
Right. Well, I could have said avocado, but somebody might actually think that there was an avocado tree out there.
I'm not sure why.
Because of the egg.
Okay.
That's all.
Okay. Well, there are some cooler.
Dandelions don't count as a crop, by the way.
Okay. People are into them.
Some people are into them.
Right. Some people are into avocados, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So with that backdrop, as you explained in the first segment,
right.
What was the purpose of your presentation?
Well, okay, so now that you have the backdrop that there's a sense of we have the option to procure our own power and we have this formula around where we've invested as a community and what we're buying, where we're purchasing power, there is, in that portfolio, there's a bit of solar, and they're trying to bring on more solar, but the majority of local power comes through a bit of hydro, and then
Is that permanent, or is that one of those dams that's going to get pulled out?
No, it's permanent. It's and then the other component really is from biomass energy, which is produced in Scotia, and it's associated with the lumber mill. And what it mostly does is take the, I'm going to call it the crumbs at the end of the toaster, so to speak, of the processing process, where it basically takes a bunch of stuff that is weird sizes, weird moisture contents, can get mixed with a little bit of dirt or rocks or, you know, things that come off the log yard, and that is burned in a pollution controlled setting, which then heats steam or heats water that makes steam, and that turns a turbine. And that technology has been around for a long time. It really came forward in the 1970s.
Didn't they have that on boats on the Mississippi with side wheels? I mean, the concept.
The concept's been around forever.
Yeah.
It's well-known, well-established technology, and it became pretty widespread in California during the oil crisis and the energy crisis in the 70s. Okay. And prior to that, for those that are long enough lived, which I am one of those. We might remember the teepee burners, which was a way to basically deal with the processing of that final end product.
But that energy wasn't captured.
Not at all, nor was there pollution control technology on it, all of those things.
Good old burn piles.
Right. And
controlled burn piles, yeah.
Yeah. And so the majority of what is burned that comes out of Scotia is from the processing of saw logs. But those saw logs also come from a whole variety of different forest management options. Some of those commercial, occasionally some small non-commercial stuff. But that's all part of kind of the essential infrastructure of being able to steward our land base and be able to have an economic way to pay for the trucking and the activities in the woods and, you know, all the things that are associated with managing that landscape.
Now, at this point, last little bit, it's been a different philosophy in the national forest and the state forest about cleaning up, managing. Letting go wild is kind of, it's.
I think independent of that, I think everyone has largely come to recognize is that our forests are too dense for the most part. We have too much fuel out there. And the risk of loss of those forested ecosystems due to wildfire is one of our existential crises that we're facing right now. So is it?
You say it from the Berkeley point of view. I say it from Myrtletown. too much stuff in the woods.
There's too much stuff in
that
the woods
can clean out and reduce some of the fire hazards. Get a little energy out of it also.
Right.
And have clean forests, clean
where
people can actually go in and, have fun.
Yeah. So we used to have three biomass power plants here in Humboldt.
Yeah. Fairhaven, is it just a wreck now?
Fairhaven has been trying to restart and stumbling, and it's complicated. And then there was the one out in Blue Lake. All of those were developed in around the early 80s and under a different time period. And
with a lot of community excitement about those.
At the time, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because it was an elegant solution to a complicated problem. Basically.
So what happened to it?
Well,
the market shift?
So they were in long-term contracts with Pacific Gas and Electric Company. Those contracts expired. Natural gas was flooding the market at a cheap price. And so the energy was more expensive coming from biomass than it was coming from natural gas. And so those contracts finished, and there was little appetite for PG&E to renew those contracts.
By PG&E.
Since then, our values have changed substantially in how we think about renewables, how we think about, the climate crisis, how we think about stewarding our forests, and now they're really an essential part of the backbone of being able to manage our ecosystems.
To the point of being able to bring them back? Is it commercially viable?
Well, it is, and what you'll see is communities that have gone through a pretty significant wildfire are all clamoring to try and bring these facilities back online.
They understand.
Right, and so, we're in an interesting place because in Humboldt, we haven't had a major wildfire that has affected our more urban populations.
The population centers, yeah.
And so we have a different set of perceptions around how important or unimportant these facilities are. I've been thinking about them, you know, some key element of the medical infrastructure in our community. You kind of can't take one element out and expect our system to work, whether that's skilled nursing, whether that's ambulance, or whether that's a certain hospital or what it is. Like, you need the whole system to work. And so we were having an engaged debate around this facility in particular, and I know we're at time here, and some things that are going on there.
The facility being the one at Scotia.
Correct.
It's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:34. We're back talking shop this morning with Yana Valakovic. So with these setups,
you
were brought in to discuss biomass, the potential of biomass, the status of biomass, the definition.
So there were four speakers. It was before the advisory committee, and then there was many members of the public there. I'd say maybe 60, 70 people showed up in person.
Well, that's a pretty good turnout.
And then it was hybrid. I couldn't tell you how many people were online. Certainly been getting a lot of comments that people saw or heard about the discussion. It included presentations from the staff of the Redwood Coast Energy Authority, the executive director of the North Coast Air Quality Management District, and then a physician who is representing a group of environmental constituents and activists that is looking at it from a climate and human health benefit perspective. And I was there to talk about kind of how the system works and the scalability and what's the connection and relationship between how we manage our forests and infrastructure and kind of the broader picture of, you know, why this.
You were kind of like a little bit of the economic.
A little bit of the economics, a little bit of the human health piece, because thinking about the wildfire exposure issue and what that's done to our air quality, and just giving some broader perspective around what the relationship is between forest stewardship, infrastructure, and, you know, what are some of the co-benefits that you get.
Was anyone status quo? We don't need to do anything. We don't want to do anything. We want to keep it as it is.
Well,
and kind of
locked up. This is the advisory committee. So, and they advise the Redwood Coast Energy Authority board that is made up of electeds from the city.
Right, the seven.
The cities, counties, the water district, and I think there's now a tribal representative there. And so this is the advisory committee who's kind of reflecting on a variety of community-related issues, some of whom have background in this topic, some of whom don't. And, you know, they were looking for an airing of both the critique and some of the ways that the air district is helping the power plant work through their challenges that they've been facing, and trying to get some perspective on why this energy matters and what the... If, you know, if they were to do something different, because they're in a long-term contract with Humboldt Sawmill Company to provide this energy, you know, what would that look like? What would be the financial impacts of it? What would be the economic impact or the, you know, social impacts? Right. What would be the other, you know, downstream effects?
Was anyone in favor of, and I don't know if Fairhaven or if Blue Lake can come back, of opening those back up? Or was it,
we got
the one and that's...
We weren't, that wasn't really a topic on
that wasn't part of the discussion?
No. I mean, the controversy that's associated right now is that Humboldt Sawmill Company has had a couple of violations, and there's some...
What does that mean?
Well, that's a great question, and we were trying to explore what does that really mean, and So the Air District Manager, Brian Wilson, was there trying to explain how they interpret those violations. And I asked the question in an earlier meeting, are these capital big V violations or are these little V violations? Meaning, are they more...
How many zeros and commas?
Well, are they more paperwork and, you know, procedural things, something that gets out of sync versus, you know, big
Didn't file a form,
you know,
as an example.
Various things. And so... I haven't been able to get into the nitty-gritty details, but what the Air District manager said is basically these are, they range in scale. Most of them are pretty small, and they're working through it. What the power plant representative shared was that they got impacted by those two earthquakes we had a year and a half ago, and they have been having some challenges. And things have been kind of, there's been some kinks to work out, and they have applied for another permit from the Air District to do some repairs on the stacks and put in some new technology because they've realized that the damage is causing, it's just
there's issues associated, physical stuff.
It's past the threshold of repairs are challenging, and so it's time to replace some of the technology. So they're waiting to get approval from the Air District to do that work, and
that seems routine.
Yeah, I don't think having the earthquake of that scale, you know, in such proximity was routine.
No, not that, but okay, there's going to be issues, you take care of the issues, and maybe you're out of compliance for a little bit, but you're addressing things and it's progressing towards
the
solution.
The stacks are monitored every 6 minutes. There's a whole variety of ways that those stacks are monitored. You know, you could talk to the Air District really to get a better sense of what that means. But what we all learned as a group was they're in the process of renewing their general Title V operating permit, and they're in the process of reviewing their application for these improvements within the stacks. And so the environmental community feels like there's not enough transparency about that, and they're looking out for the community at large, which, hey, we all want clean air, 100%, right? We all want to live in a healthy environment. 100%.
I don't think anybody's ever going to campaign on the platform or with a plank. More dirty air.
No, right.
Less drinkable water. I don't think that one would play out well.
Yeah, right. Or we don't care about you. It's all about us. Like,
yeah, that would be another cornerstone to worry about. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, what are the processes, procedures? Does Redwood Coast Energy Authority need duplicative process? Can they rely on the Air District? These are some of the nuance of the conversation.
Oh, so there was some trust factor.
There was some trust factor explored. Okay. And in the end, the advisory committee took some effort to try and pass a motion, which would be a recommendation to the board, and it failed for a lack of a majority.
Oh.
So essentially what it means is going forward, status quo, which is that they have the procedures in place to do what they need to do. The advisory committee was split definitely and felt like there are some substantial concerns, and that will be expressed to the big board
yeah.
And the big board can work through that in whatever their process is.
So for your niche with the biomass, was there after you explained and went through, and I'm sure talked about potential supply or unlimited supply
yeah.
Was there a eye-opening moment or two that people went aha and got excited about it, or was it more we'll worry about that in the future?
I don't know. I mean, I had 8 minutes. Each of the speakers had 8 minutes. It's hard to get a lot out of 8 minutes, and then we all took a variety of questions. You know, I think the question is, if Redwood Coast Energy Authority got out of this, would the power plant close? And the answer, I think, at this point is a resounding no, because now PG&E is much more interested in procuring this kind of power. And so, you know, the disadvantage that Redwood Coast Energy Authority would have is that they would no longer be in a contractual relationship with a power plant going forward. And I think it's in the community's interest to actually have that kind of formal establishment through, you know, these kinds of contracts. It enables conversation and enables dialogue where PG&E was driving the equation.
Just a spot on the dog.
We know how that works.
Works is a good, interesting word. That implies progress. You know that.
Right, it does.
Okay.
I mean, I think what people weren't ready to hear is that we really have to supercharge forest management and manufacturing, and bioenergy facilities are a key part of that infrastructure.
To allow that to happen.
Exactly. Yeah. And people don't quite understand how fragile it all is when you start dissembling, you know, elements of our system.
When we were growing up, it was clear cut yes or no.
Right. It's not
Thank you very much. That was the choice, and that's all we ever heard about.
Correct. And now it's much more nuanced than that.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets. More than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Jana Valakovic. The concept that I've been trying to play with a little bit, you know, as PG&E is going up, when we had the stations in Brookings, there was Coos Curry Electric, a local cooperative utility, and it was for Coos County and for Curry County. Is there a thought that we could do something and offset a chunk of PG&E with all the challenges that we seem to be running into, either with hookups or capacities, or if you don't happen to be just in the Eureka area, the rolling brownouts and all these various things, as well as the challenges that you were referencing?
I mean, I totally understand the interest in it. I think it'd be great to bring in Redwood Coast Energy Authority. I could do that on my next show if we wanted to talk about it, because I think they've thought about this at a high level. Like, what is it to actually take to maintain those lines? To do, you know, like, once you take over the whole system, it's way more than just managing the energy procurement piece and managing, you know,
how many snowplows do you want?
Right. And how many weather predictors do you want? And how many utility line workers do you need? And how many of this and how many of that?
It's a commitment.
It's a big commitment. Yeah. And you know, in a county, you know, our community, our size, with such long lines, such big exposures to...
And lack of density.
Lack of trees.
But they got rivers and mountains and lack of density. So, I mean, there's a model that's possible.
Yeah. I don't know if
the math... And they give rebates.
Yeah. I don't know if the math works out, but...
It'd be interesting at least to...
You know, I guess just like you asked me what were some of the take-home messages that I delivered. And, you know, one of those is that all renewables have challenges, right? Every energy source has a dark side. And so if we're going to shine a light directly on biomass and bioenergy, then let's shine a light on each of our options. You know, we're having a good debate about offshore wind right now. Solar has a dark side. Even geothermal has a dark side.
Oh, so biomass is being singled out as the boogeyman
in this conversation? Yes, and you know,
really?
Well, let's look at it. And the way I think about it is, a diverse portfolio is a good idea because you know they all have their strengths, they all have their ups and downs.
That was diverse, right?
Diverse, right? And why biomass is really important for us is that it delivers 24-hour power, so it's got baseload power. And as people start to switch towards wanting to charge their cars at night and have this increased demand at night that didn't used to occur, like it doesn't match with solar and may not match with wind in terms of the period of, you know, generation and how much storage can we have. And what we heard at this meeting is you get maybe 3 additional hours of storage. So you need some of those consistent baseload providers. That comes through hydro, comes through geothermal, comes through biomass. So biomass is really important in...
And it's not like we don't have it.
No.
A ton of pressure on getting rid of this stuff, too.
Right. And I think the message I was trying to deliver is that there's really no future without wildfire at all. And there's no future without smoke. But we get to choose how intense it is and, you know, trying to adapt and mitigate its impacts. And
trees burn.
Well, and trees grow. Trees burn and trees grow. And we have a ton of carbon stored in these trees. And, you know, and I think you've heard me talk about this in the past. Like 1 out of every 8 acres in California has burned in the last 10 years. And so we're vulnerable to that. We haven't, you know, reversed the storage capacity in these forests and exposed them in our communities in the same way that other parts of the state have. So
how frustrating is it that because we live in the damp zone, that, you know, I guess Salmon Creek had a fire a little bit ago, but in Trinidad, I know, burned down in the 40s. There aren't that many examples. So are we foolish in thinking that we are insulated from this and it's not
we are
wins.
Right. It's a low probability, high severity event for us. And it will come our direction. The question is, when we're in condition to burn, is the rest of the state? And the answer is yes. The rest of the state is in condition to burn. And so we already have other ignitions across California that are threatening residential populations. There won't be a huge amount of resources available to us.
Yeah, our fire guys are going to be covering the other fires.
Exactly. So we tend to move our personnel around where we have the most people as the first approach to make sure that we protect life. And we don't have the huge population. And
more life gets more attention.
Right. Yeah. So I think we don't, when you live on the coast, especially live in Eureka, Arcata, you can feel like this isn't our issue. But we get impacted from wildfires all across.
Energy costs are.
And the energy costs and the ability to, insure our homes, like all of this stuff is tied together. And I'll close with something that I found really interesting. The day after this meeting last week, I opened my Apple News and the top story was, have we thought about the energy demands that AI is taking? Apparently super energy intensive for all that computational power, and it's exceeding grid capacity in a number of communities throughout the United States. I don't know that that's happening here, but like our demand and our interest in energy is not going down. It's continuing to escalate. So how do we find and build that portfolio that matches our communities, our values, and has all these other downstream positive benefits to our community?
Downstream. Nice. Had to bring in hydro. If folks want to find out more about this stuff, is it RCEA?
It would be Redwood Coast Energy Authority. Okay. Would be a good place to go. Lots of archive materials, lots of resources available.
Nice to see you.
Okay.
See everybody else tomorrow.